Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
It's time for the church to acknowledge that we have brothers and sisters who are gay.
LGBTs have to find a household of worship that reflects what your views are and what you believe.
A gay person who still wants to attend church after the way the church has treated the gay community, I'm telling you, they have more faith than I do. They have more faith than a lot of you.
What's not loving is to look someone in the eye when God says they are in jeopardy of an eternity in hell and merely wink and nod at their sin because you're afraid of being called names.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Let's go back to school, shall we? Ooh, that kind of gave me the shakes. This is Wretched Radio. Do you still have those nightmares where you're sitting in a classroom, they're passing out the test, and you haven't studied in, you know, years? That one's kind of gone away for me. Jimmy, do you have any reoccurring dreams or nightmares? I'll interpret it for you because I could build a website and that would make me an expert on dream interpretation. So go ahead, Joseph.
I honestly don't.
Really?
I don't have reoccurring ones.
I have a theme. Huh. It's not the same dream. It's a theme. I want to go home. I'm Dorothy, apparently. I can't get home no matter what I do. And we'll be, and it's usually Mrs. Friel is with me, and we've got to get to some place. We've got to get to a church. We've got to get back to the ministry. Home. And the train breaks down, or the flat tire, or the directions, or the city that we used to know is like entirely different. We can't find anything. Jimmy, would you like to soothsay me?
I don't even know where to begin.
Where's Freud when you need him? Let's go back to school, shall we? Specifically, we're going to go to Seattle Pacific University. You might be familiar with that school. It's on the West Coast, and it has historically been an evangelical school that has lost its way. Do you recall, this was a few years ago, when Seattle Pacific University was going to affirm its statement of faith, but 70% of the professors said, no, we don't like that whole thing about male and female. Yeah! How does that happen? So I'm reading this book titled Stockholm Syndrome Christianity by John G. West, who is always worth reading. Still one of my favorite books of all time is John West, Darwin Day in America. He just wrote this book called Stockholm Syndrome Christianity. And the term, you might be familiar with it, is when the captor has captives who adopt the worldview, values, or beliefs of the captor. That's Stockholm Syndrome, where people who are being held hostage kind of feel bad for the guy that has a gun to their head. And he equates that to Christianity, specifically Christians who become sympathetic to the worldview of the world system. And we start to adopt their language. We start to water down theology. We buff off any rough edges of Christianity so as not to offend. And we certainly don't want to be exclusive when it comes to two genders only and male and female created he them. The question is, how does a school go from being stoutly evangelical to becoming extreme? Well, it's just radical. It's just radical. It has gone off the rails. Well, John West, in the book Stockholm Syndrome Christianity, he was a professor there. I believe he started in 1995, and he was there for half a dozen years, something like that. And he saw the unraveling of the school. And I thought, this is instructive for all of us. Institutions are important. Institutions can stabilize either an organization or a zip code by being firm, steady, consistent, and contributing something that is good for people. And so we want to be aware that we as Christians are involved in the institution of the church, but then the parachurch ministries, the universities, the associations, how do we guard those from becoming Seattle Pacific University? So let's go back to school. This is John G. West, by the way. It was founded by pious Free Methodists in the 1890s. Oh, I didn't know that. Jimmy, I'm going to give you some homework.
Okay.
Okay, you didn't get the shakes from that. That's pretty good. You're going to get some homework. I want you to do your AI magic for Free Methodists.
Okay.
Let's take a look at their statement of faith, because according to John West, it was very evangelical. Might not be a Methodist, but nevertheless, it was within certainly small O orthodoxy. So the Seattle Pacific University was founded by them in the 1890s. Has a long history of standing for personal holiness. That would make sense from the Methodist denomination. John Wesley, very into that. And they stood for biblical fidelity. This was the statement from the college's 1929 yearbook. This is so cool. I don't know if you've ever, you got to be kind of a geek, but go to an institution that was formerly based in Christian values and principles, or they were even founded to be seminaries to prepare people to be ministers. Harvard! Sorry, got a little thing stuck right there. And watch the progression of their motto. And you will notice their little tweaks. Okay, that one's not so bad. I see how we got it. And the next thing you know, woo, you are way off track. So here is 1929 Seattle Pacific University statement. The Bible is the very word of God. The book of books. In this day, when modernist skeptics and faithless scientists and philosophers are doing their utmost to discredit the Bible as the word of God and to prove it only a collection of the myths and folklore of a primitive and semi-civilized people, our Bible school is glad to take its place in the front ranks of those standing for the inspiration and integrity of scriptures. That's stout. 1940s, the college constructed an auditorium and emblazoned the front side of the building with an image of the Bible. Underneath, the word truth, all caps, was affixed. During the same decade, the 40s, Jack DeShazer, a member of the famous Doolittle's Raiders during World War II, studied at Seattle Pacific. He eventually became a Free Methodist missionary to Japan. Sometimes he spoke together with Mitsuo Fuchida, the pilot who led the attack on Pearl Harbor and who had also become a Christian. How cool is that? That reminds me of the son of Jim Elliot. I can't remember the man's name. They did kind of a speaking tour back, late 90s, early 2000s. He was the man who killed his father as a missionary, got saved, and now they're brothers and they can actually speak together. That's awesome. In the 1960s, the college's seal bore the motto, Valiant for the Truth. Francis Schaeffer spoke at chapel. Fast forward, spring 2021. SPU made national headlines when over 70% of the faculty voted no confidence in the school's board of trustees because the board failed to repeal a policy requiring employees to abide by the university's statement on human sexuality. How in the world does that happen? The offending statement affirmed sexual experience is intended between a man and a woman, and the full expression of sexuality is to be experienced and celebrated within the covenant of marriage between a man and a woman. Bingo, perfect, spot on. But 70% of the faculty said, we're not signing it. And I do believe they tried a power play. We're going to quit if you don't relent. Faculty were deeply, not to say histrionically, upset that the board wouldn't yield. The chair of the faculty senate declared, this is traumatic. Oh, there's our therapeutic lingo. So traumatic. That's toxic. This is personal, quote, it goes to one's humanity. This goes out to outsiders, defining people of who is in and who is out. That is the autonomy worldview that is so prevalent. Your insides need to be affirmed on the outside, regardless of what we once thought about that sort of behavior, thinking, or believing. Now it must be celebrated because it's personal. You can't offend me. You can't do anything to hurt my feelings. And so it is, Seattle Pacific University began a war for the soul of the institution. A former staff member anonymously posted a review. This was at Glassdoor, and John West, Glassdoor can always be tricky, but nevertheless, John West said, I affirm what this guy wrote. So here it is. I worked here, Seattle Pacific, for many years and attended the school as an undergrad. I can tell you with all certainty that anyone on campus who expresses belief in the inerrancy of the Bible is labeled a fundamentalist. I just don't accept people's pejoratives anymore. Okay, sure, I'm a fundamentalist. Next, consider to be narrow-minded. If, however, your faith has a generous blend of worldliness diluting it, you'll feel right at home at SBU. In other words, we want to make sure that we're accepting, that we are, what was that word that we heard churches using last week? We are fully affirming or fully welcoming. Trickery. Very few students, staff, or faculty leave SBU with a deeply rooted faith, at least not in the Jesus of my Bible, he wrote. I've seen countless students come to SBU as freshmen, fired up for the Lord, then leave as seniors, as atheists, or embracing a very worldly stance typical of modern culture. It's the norm from what I've seen. A campus rife with students who drink, do drugs, have premarital relations, experiment with gender roles. It is no different than any other college campus. How did that happen? Next on Wretched Radio.
You ever notice how Christians sometimes dance around the J word? You know, judging. Yeah, we've gotten so scared of our culture that we're practically doing spiritual gymnastics trying to avoid it. What if I told you that righteous judgment isn't just some outdated concept? It's actually one of God's greatest gifts to protect his flock. That's why I'm fired up about our new resource, Thou Shalt Judge, with Todd Friel and Justin Peters. It's honestly judging how we judge. Listen, if you're tired of watching your loved ones fall for every wind of doctrine that blows through TikTok, this resource could be an answered prayer. 13 powerful lectures that will revolutionize how you view biblical discernment. Plus, because we love you, there's a free study guide included. It's time to stop tiptoeing and start standing firm. Your family and friends need you anchored in God's Word now more than ever at FortisInstitute.org. That's the Fortis store at FortisInstitute.org. Thou Shalt Judge with Todd Friel and Justin Peters.
The life issue. We cannot disengage from the battle. And there is a way that you can win a life and rescue a soldier who's about to be executed through abortion. Preborn.org/wretched. Ultrasounds still save lives. These pregnancy centers that progressives would love to shut down or arrest people for praying in front of abortuaries, they're still doing excellent work and babies are still being rescued. This is a tangible way to save a life. An ultrasound is $28. 80% of the time, mom chooses life. Want to engage in the battle? This ain't about politics. This is about saving those who are staggering to the slaughter, period. Preborn.org/wretched, preborn.org/wretched.
Hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. Thanks to faithful supporters just like you, our new Fortis Institute podcasts aren't just reaching people, they're making waves. Every single one of our new shows ranks at least in the top 10% of all podcasts worldwide, some climbing even higher than that. From Integrated with Dr. John Krotz to Way of Manhood with Dr. Adam Tyson, these programs are doing exactly what they were intended to do. They're touching lives and they're transforming hearts. But here's the thing, we can't continue this vital work without your help. As we face this brave new world together, I want to ask if you would consider joining us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Only if you're already faithfully giving to your local church, though, and not strapped by any type of unmanaged debt. If those areas in your life are in order, would you consider joining us? Because your support will help us produce even more life-changing content. Just visit FortisInstitute.org right now. That's FortisInstitute.org. Wretched. Amazing grace. Amazing gospel.
Know your reformers. Martin Luther was a German monk and professor who was plagued with doubt about his salvation. When he finally read the Bible for himself, he rediscovered the doctrine of justification by grace through faith. His bold witness for biblical truth was the spark that ignited the Protestant Reformation. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
From truth to wholeness in truth to engaging the culture. What? Who took a left-hand turn here? This is Wretched Radio. John West's book, Stockholm Syndrome Christianity. John West, always worth paying attention to. Doing a thorough treatment on the invasion of liberalism and worldliness into pretty much every realm of society, including institutions and churches and denominations. He was a professor at Seattle Pacific University, and he grieved as he watched it happen. A university that began with a denominational affiliation, this is a big thing, a denominational affiliation, was suddenly not looking at all like the denomination. What happened? Well, he explains in the book that a new president came along, I believe it was in the late 90s, who said it's time for a change. We've got to go about the business of getting up to speed with society. And so we're going to change our motto. If you recall, the motto of SPU was truth. Well, that's pretty straightforward. But then it changed that we want to update, we want to stay cool. And so in the 90s, it was wholeness and truth. But that was then dismissed and exchanged for engaging the culture, changing the world. And John writes, at first I'm like, yeah, that sounds good. But change the world based on what? This is why the Bible is always the battlefield. John discloses how the separation, the severing of the institution SPU with its free Methodist denominational connections, that's really what allowed it to become completely unmoored and just sail out to sea and become progressive. Because the president said, we can't have all of these guys on the board, but don't worry, we'll stay sort of grounded in Methodism. As an institution, John writes, we became preoccupied with respectability rather than truth. The new motto might have been more aptly phrased, embracing the culture and being changed by the world. The changing of the motto had consequences I never imagined. Now, which came first, the motto or the changes, then the motto to reflect it? I think that there are some lessons to be learned from this. Number one, accountability. It was started as a free Methodist institution. Jimmy, you sent me the statement of faith. People would quibble on some of these things, on, you know, our Arminian versus Reformed, most right. likely. I think the holiness issue, that's a Wesleyan distinctive. And of course, SPU, being connected to Free Methodist, has a Wesleyan flavor to it. It was the entire sanctification doctrine that you have the ability to become inwardly pure and not sin. I think Paul would disagree with that, a la Romans chapter 7. And mostly their statement of faith, solid, but I would suggest this though. Number two, their first doctrine was the Trinity. I think that the Reformers had a better pattern. The first doctrine typically, and if you go to a good Bible teaching church, typically the first doctrine is Bible, because none of these other doctrines have any bearing. They have no power. They have no support. There's no guidelines, no bumpers that can be affixed to engaging the culture and changing the world, or even the doctrine of the Trinity. How do you know the doctrine of the Trinity is right? The Bible. So I say the Bible goes first. Here's what it said. The Bible as the inspired, infallible word of God and the ultimate authority for faith and practice. That's good. Could be better. Inspired. Yep. We've absolutely infallible. You could add inerrant. You could also add sufficient. We don't need nothing else besides the Bible. And so those quibbles aside, I do think, though, that their statement of faith might be an indicator of why a denomination, even though they were still connected to the Free Methodists, were able to go a little bit more progressive. And I think we did an entire video about this. Early support for the ordination and ministry roles of women based on spiritual gifting rather than gender. That was a distinctive of the Free Methodists in the 1890s. Why? Because John Wesley opened that door. If you recall, he did not ordain women as elders, but he did send them out on the circuit to preach. They're gifted. Let them go. We're seeing some fruit. Therefore, it justifies overriding 1 Timothy 2:12. And then, of course, as time progressed, now in the Methodist denomination, you do have the ordination of women. And I think the lesson from that is, if you open the door a crack on virtually any doctrine, look out. The door's going to get kicked open. It is every time we have seen something like this happen, that is inevitably the beginning of it. It's usually the role of women, or it's our attitude toward the Bible. And when you diminish either of those, that's all it takes. Ask the ELCA. Ask the Methodist denomination. Ask the Anglican Communion. Look at where they've gone. But how did they get started that way? I think it is a less than stout view, the stoutest view of the Bible. But any doctrines that are compromised are going to allow the entire institution to follow. Because once you open the door, you can't close it. Because inevitably, somebody's foot is going to get wounded in that slamming of the door. And they'll yelp. And these days, yelping is very... You know, these days, what you see is, if you recall that statement from the one professor at SPU, what did he say? This is personal. This is toxic. This is dangerous. I don't feel safe because of your position on gender and sexuality. Where did that worldview come from? Well, that's the autonomous worldview that we lived in, that we're baked in. But in a sense, isn't it kind of a toddler worldview? It makes me feel bad. I don't want that. And it's just a squawking. You're hurting my feelings. And that argument, however, it's powerful. That argument seems to work. Here's what the guy said. This is traumatic. There it is. Traumatic. That they actually identify genders and sexuality and marriage. It's traumatic. That's like a toddler squawk. But there's still some unanswered questions about how an institution like SBU, I think, can find itself wildly wayward, which, by the way, that is a trend for institutions. The pattern historically for institutions, they're begun by a group of men who want to make a point about something. They want to respond to a cultural issue. They want to respond to a threat on orthodoxy, or they see a great need. And so that thing is affirmed. We're going to be this. It's typically done in response to something else, which I think is always a little bit precarious, if you don't mind me saying so. But they affirm, this is what we're about. That's generation one. Generation two, they assume it. Yeah, we're about that. By generation three, it's abandoned. It is textbook. But I think something happened at SPU along the way that I think could also be instructive for churches, institutions, parachurch, denominations, universities. I think there must have been some form of compromise along the way because of need. It could have been because they wanted worldly respectability. We need to bring in these professors who went to Princeton. We need to bring in these professors that went to Cambridge and Harvard. And so that we've got some academic respectability in the world, that they'll affirm us. Look out. You just open the door even further. Or it could be the hiring of professors who just, well, we kind of need somebody. This is the best we could find. And I would suggest to you, to the moral to that story is, if you don't find somebody who is fully committed and in alignment with your values, don't hire them. That was something Emile Zwane told me, I don't know how many years ago. 10, 15 years ago. You know, we're talking about hiring practices and who comes on board to the ministries. And he was so emphatic. He's like, whatever you do, don't hire somebody, especially, he would say from top to bottom, but he said, especially somebody in a role where they can have an influence on the direction of the ministry. He said, they must be fully on board, like totally, and having exhibited it. Don't take somebody who's like, I'm down with that. Yeah, I just got introduced to your ministry and I'm down with that. Easy said, pass. And I think there was wisdom in that. I haven't forgotten that, by the way. With the exception of Jimmy, everybody here is stout. So I think that the lessons of SPU are now on full display for us. Adhere to the Bible as your foundation, tenaciously. Don't compromise an iota. Don't compromise on Genesis. Don't compromise on a hermeneutic, on the supernatural. Don't compromise. Make sure that all of your ologies are affirmed by anybody that your institution brings on. And if there is just a whiff of somebody who is like, yeah, well, I can live with that. You know what you've done? You've cracked open the door. And the next thing you know, your Seattle Pacific University or frankly, 100 other Christian institutions that were once stout that are now barely recognizable as being a Christian institution. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. The fundamental right of parents to guide their children's upbringing found powerful allies in Congress this last week as Senators Tim Scott and James Lankford, joined by Representative Virginia Fox, introduced the Families' Rights and Responsibilities Act. The legislation arrives as a direct challenge to bureaucrats like former Education Secretary Miguel Cardona, who once dismissed concerned parents as merely misbehaving in public. The Supreme Court has consistently recognized the primary role of parents in caring for children, and this bill aims to codify that sacred responsibility into law. President Trump continues his swift action to protect life, reinstating both the Mexico City policy and Hyde Amendment restrictions on taxpayer funding of abortion. The executive orders not only restore these crucial protections, but also rescind Biden's whole-of-government initiative that had redefined abortion as health care. Analysis reveals the Biden administration funneled over $1.23 billion to pro-abortion groups during his term, including Planned Parenthood and the UN's Population Fund, a misuse of taxpayer dollars that these orders will now prevent. The restoration of pro-life policies extends to the state level as well, where Indiana Governor Michael Braun signed an executive order demanding full enforcement of his state's abortion laws. His directive specifically addresses the Department of Health's troubling practice of withholding crucial abortion reporting data behind the shield of privacy concerns. With abortions down nearly 100% in Indiana, proper reporting becomes vital to ensure medical exceptions aren't being exploited to circumvent the law. Well, truth itself faces fresh assault from across the Atlantic as one EU commissioner unveiled a chilling comparison between the spread of disinformation and viral pandemics. In promoting Brussels' new Democracy Shield initiative, the commissioner claimed citizens, quote, not prepared to distinguish facts from disinformation, contaminate others like unvaccinated people spread disease. Major European newspapers, including The Guardian, have already begun severing ties with X, formerly Twitter, a move that silences rather than enriches public discourse. And justice and truth converged on Pennsylvania, where a 20-year-old woman now faces up to 17 years in prison after admitting she fabricated rape allegations that kept an innocent man locked up for over a month. The woman targeted the stranger simply because she found him creepy, resulting in his wrongful imprisonment and national media coverage of the fabricated crime. And that has been today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks. If you want more, you can download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
Important dates in Christian history. 387 AD. Augustine of Hippo is converted. His writings became bedrock for the Middle Ages and were influential in the Reformation. The Confessions and City of God are still read by many. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Mowing your lawn is theological. Ain't everything theological? Exactly my point. This is Wretched Radio. Mowing your lawn has a worldview behind it. You see, in the Midwest, specifically Minnesota, the land of sky blue waters, which was the jingle for Ham's Brewery. I don't know if they're still in business. We were watching a show, Tender Mercies. It was rated PG. And we thought, let's watch it. It won 2 Academy Awards. Robert Duvall playing Robert Duvall. All of his movies should be. This time, Robert Duvall plays a cowboy. This time, Robert Duvall plays a drunken country singer who gets his life cleaned up, because it just always feels like the same guy, pretty much. Nevertheless, he was a country singer. Apparently, life got a little hard. He ran to the bottle for his comfort, destroyed his marriage, destroyed his career, finds himself in the middle of nowhere, Texas, in a motel where the woman who owns the motel, because her husband had died, she lives there with her son, allows him to live on the property as long as he stays sober and fixes the property and does some maintenance work. And things are going well. They get married. They're going to church. And this was so wild. There were a couple of church scenes where they actually sang the entire verse. No, have you ever noticed that in movies? They'll sing a line, but then right before they get to the name Jesus, then we cut away. They didn't do that in this movie. It was in the 80s. I think Robert Duvall professes to be a Christian, and I think he brought that to a lot of his projects. It was kind of refreshing, honestly, but the old demons came knocking, and Robert Duvall decides to go running around town in his pickup truck, and he stops at a liquor store, and outside of the liquor store was a sign that was promoting Schlitz beer. Schlitz, Jimmy, do you know what Schlitz beer is?
I do not.
Do you know what Schmidt beer is?
No, I do not.
And you don't know what Ham's beer is?
I do not.
From the land of sky blue waters. That's Ham's beer, okay. West 7th Street. I don't, would you look up and see if they're still in business?
Okay.
Because they were right on West 7th Street by a, Friel, we're not familiar with St. Paul geography. And then right across the bridge was an awning company. Let's see if they're still in business, shall we? Because all of those beers, they came out of the Midwest, where at least in Minnesota, yep, we just got back on track. There's a trend to not mow your lawn. What is with that? I would suggest you worldview is with that. We have a mandate as human beings. We are the cream of God's creative crop. We are the ones that are to beautify the planet. Yeah, it is beautiful. Sunsets, mountains, all of those things are gorgeous, but God instructs us to take the thing that is untamed and tame it. Take something that is good like this and make it better by turning it into that. And throughout the ages, at least in Western civilization, at least for the last, oh, let's call it at least 1500 years, there's been that understanding that we can not just mow our lawns to speak a word about who human beings are. We're the lawn conquerors. Now, we're the ones who manage the lawn. The lawn doesn't control us. We don't just live in the woods. No, we cut them down if we need to, and then we build cool houses and fences with them, and we mow the lawn. That comes from a higher view of man. So much of what we witness these days is anthropological. It all has to do with our view and attitude toward man. The view that says we are just like the sea slugs says you don't need to cut your lawn. In fact, you shouldn't cut your lawn because, you know, grass cries too when you cut it. That's a worldview issue. But so too, related very directly to it, is architecture. We used to build things to beautify. We used to make buildings that would uplift the human spirit. I'm not sure I'm totally nuts about that phrase, but I think it has some meaning. That you can walk into a building and you just sense, okay, this is loftier. I need to sit up straight here. These are human beings that actually care about what other human beings view and how they feel when they view them, which is why, is Ham still open, Jimmy?
Technically, yes, but they sold out in 1999.
Wow.
And they are still brewed by the same company that brews Coors beer.
Coors?
Mm-hmm.
I do believe it's Coors.
Whatever.
Is how you pronounce
Coors,
it in, Coors. In Denver. Okay, but isn't it more like a, I drive, the only reason I know this, I drive by it from the airport on the way to Candyland. down St. Paul. I think it was one of those, what do they call those beers? It's really popular where they're boutique beers.
Oh, yeah, craft.
Yeah, craft beer.
Right.
Is that what it is?
I think so, yes.
What is it called?
I don't know.
You did not dig deeply enough.
Fine.
The proclamation from the president, this was one of the statements that he signed when taking office, actually made me happy. Now, I know not everybody agrees because we talked about this a little bit last week because I discovered a website, an Instagram site that contrasted classic architecture, classic art with modern art and modern architecture, asking the question, what happened here? how do we go from, wow, look at that ceiling, that arch is amazing, that statue is so lifelike, but it's marble? How did that's amazing? And now we put up the like a piece of canvas with paint splattered all over it. What happened here? I think anthropology. That art, it moved from uplifting and being inspiring to being shocking or to being deconstructionist. That's what the modern art is. Modern art says to classic art, we're done with you, old stupid. We're not going to follow your lines and your curves and your patterns. No, we're going to make it sharp and severe just to show you we're smarter than you. And so the president issued this proclamation promoting beautiful federal civic architecture. I hereby direct the administrator of the General Services Administration, blah, 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 to submit to me within 60 days recommendations to advance the policy that federal public buildings should be visually identifiable as civic buildings and respect regional, traditional, and classical architecture in order to uplift and beautify public spaces and ennoble the United States and our system of self-government. That's worldview right there. Such recommendations shall consider appropriate revisions, blah, 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 blah. In other words, we're going to spend the money to make government buildings speak a word, to have them say, we're a society that's higher. We're a society that believes that human beings can be beaten down or lifted up through architecture. Now, I think I mentioned something like that last week. Received this email in my never before nicotine stained fingers. This is very, again, everybody's so gracious. I like being a Christian. He wrote this: these old cathedrals were often built on the back of a feudal system and with state church financing. Yeah, no, that's true. No argument there. But our federal buildings are built that way today. Churches are usually not. In fact, I can't think of an instance where today the government would ever fund the building of a church. Tax breaks, sure. Contribute money, doubt it. But what we build as a church is on us, but it also speaks a word. So I grant you, the old Duomos of Europe, there was perhaps corrupt money behind those, but I don't think that diminishes the point. That something looks like, wow, one of my fellow planet inhabitors made that. I'm a part of the human race. This is a good thing. I don't want my taxes spent on pretty buildings in Washington, D.C. You know, I feel that, Mike. I do. I get that because you want it to be used efficiently. But sometimes things can be built in a way that it actually fosters more flourishing, that people are more productive. I think this is pretty scientific, a workspace that human beings feel like, it's good to be here. Hey, I'm doing something important. It's comfortable. Great, got all of that, but it's ergonomically sound and I'm feeling good about this and the lighting is nice. I'm not in a dungeon someplace. And people become more productive. And I think the same thing can happen with architecture. You've got citizens that are elevated in their thinking about humanity. I think that it can actually put some curbs on people's behavior. I don't want to be destroying stuff when people are building it up. Why would I want to be tearing it down? And so economically, it might actually be a good investment. He said, those buildings produce nothing to maintain themselves. Well, I know it might be softer, but I think they do in just human productivity. And also, if you ask people in Europe, they're very grateful those Duomos exist because tourism. Why is it that when people go on a trip, on a vacation to Italy, they're like, okay, so I went to Florence and I saw the Duomo. Why didn't you go see that little modern church that they built in 1994? Well, I don't know, because there's nothing special about that. Bingo. Architecture speaks. Your front lawn speaks. Theology and anthropology. What's your yard look like? This is Wretched Radio.
Big news from Fortis Institutes. You know how we have 8 fellows already bringing you free daily content at fortisplus.org? Well, starting February 7th, our very first fellowette will make her debut. Libby Glossett, one of the finest biblical counselors in the entire country, is coming on board. And you know, people might think we're trying to add a woman's voice to check some type of boxes or appease the feminists, but the truth is, we found one of this country's most incredible biblical counselors who just happens to be a woman. And her way of applying God's word to real life is extremely powerful. She'll be launching a weekly podcast and creating resources just for women. So if there's a woman in your life looking for solid biblical teaching, tell them to mark their calendars for February 7th and head to fortisplus.org or go ahead and download Fortis Plus on their mobile device right now and be ready for Libby Glossin. FortisPlus.org.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus, all of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number 6 for preparing students for the real world. All that, plus the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Knowledge is power, but only when applied. Like a story I heard about on the radio the other day, this woman worked a job for a tech company previously, and she stopped working at some point to be a mother. Years later, realized that the stock options they gave her were worth millions. Imagine having a bank account filled with millions of dollars, never using it. Well, that's theology without application. Introducing Integrated with Dr. John Crotts.
We'll help you connect head and heart, turning Bible knowledge into life-changing action.
Thank you, Dr. Crotts. And at Fortis Institute, listen, we're standing strong in a world that's losing its way. Our name means strong in Latin, and that's our promise to you. Visit fortisinstitute.org or download the Fortis Plus app today and start listening to Integrated with Dr. John Crotts, and then join us in standing firm no matter the cost, because in a world that's falling apart, we're building something strong. FortisInstitute.org. It's FortisInstitute.org.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is mercy. Those who possess this gift are able to show compassion and comfort the afflicted, people who are sick, dying, or bereaved. God cares about the things that afflict us and has provided comfort in troubled times. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Not that we need more proof the world has gone bonkers, but we got it for you. This is Wretched Radio. Jimmy, you did some sleuthing on Hamm's Brewery in St. Paul, and somehow you got lost.
I did.
You are not familiar with the Twin Cities, are you?
I am not.
Hamm's is on West 7th Street. It's firmly in St. Paul territory. You found a brewery on 2nd Street in
Minneapolis.
Do you hear the difference? St. Paul, Minneapolis. Do you hear?
I do.
I don't know if it's, is it paternal or fraternal twins that look identical? Whichever one it is, the Twin Cities are not identical. They are definitely different. Minneapolis, high rises, glass, the city of lakes, pristine. It used to be anyway. And then St. Paul was European. Gorgeous architecture and Crocus Hill. If you like Victorian homes and those mansions, whew, what it costs to heat those places. That's something a Minnesotan says regularly. And it's not just blocks or a couple of blocks. It's like miles. It's like a couple square miles of all Victorian. Gorgeous, because they were all built back when human beings used to care about the type of domicile that people lived in and what it spoke and what it said and the lines and the designs. Were they pleasing to the eye? Do they make you feel good when you see it? We used to care about those things, but then Hemp's Brewery opened and people forgot about it. But now Hemp's Brewery, you say, is still open.
I think so,
But you found a brewery in Minneapolis.
I did.
And they're making beer that's laced with...
THC.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Well, they do have some morals. The beer, the drinks with THC are non-alcoholic.
Well, good. I'm glad. Well, you don't want to overdo it.
Yeah. They even have a sports drink that has electrolytes.
Oh, good. Well, so it's healthy. So while I'm passed out, my body's repairing itself. That's or it. Something like that. Mrs. Friel was on about this weekend. She was reading went down some rabbit hole with marijuana. Let me rephrase that. She was reading about marijuana because something caught her attention about the potency of it. Like some of them are like 99% THC. Yikes. This is not your Cheech and Chong type of marijuana. This stuff is nasty business and it is powerful. And I was thinking we had this conversation this weekend. It's like the governments that sign the legalization of marijuana, are they just that dumb? Really? Just, are we that dumb? What, heroin next? LSD? Well, we're doing that with mushrooms. Hey, that lion's mane is a mushroom thing. Is that what you got me doing?
No.
This is, we want people to get dumber, and they're seeing that the side effects of this, what it is doing to the human brain, because it's so powerful, and it was all snuck in under the guise of medicinal marijuana. Then why didn't you run it through a pharmaceutical company? Oh, yeah, because there was an agenda behind it. Once again, deconstruction, low view of humanity. They would say, no, it's a high view of humanity. We need to let people get stoned if that's what they want to do with their own bodies. That's a low view. A high view says, no. That's an image bearer of God. And we know better, and we're not going to let them do that to their bodies. And we're going to work very hard to make sure that they don't destroy themselves and their families. But that's not the way we think anymore. We've absolutely gone totally bonkers. Here's another one for your consideration. Pornography. Even inside of the church, well, it helps some marriages remain zesty. Are you nuts? Are you kidding me? There's nothing worse for you, for human beings, than watching that. Why? Because you're not supposed to. Why? Because it is a sign of the fall. It's a reminder that human beings do not live in a world that is pristine. It is a cursed world. And we're not supposed to be looking at other people like that. And that is, every time that we do that, we're saying, Genesis is wrong, which really upsets Ken Ham. And you do not want an upset Ken Ham. You know, that Answers in Genesis. Matt was just up visiting Answers in Genesis. And he just came back this morning. And he spent time with guys like Mark Loy at Answers in Genesis. And I said, so tell me, what do you think about Mark Loy? And I think his word was, what a gentleman. They're so gracious. That's an institution that is just populated with godly men. It is such a joy. And there's godly women there too. Dr. Dana Snead from AIG, she's been writing our curriculum as of late for all of our resources, which, by the way, did you know that all of the curriculum is now free at Fortis Institute? So if you've got Road Trip to Truth, but you don't have the study guide, you can go get it for free. You got Wretched Worldview, you can go get the study guide for free. All of that stuff. We just want to give as much stuff away as we possibly can. And I don't know that I made much ado of this, but I'm going to right now. The goal that we had for the end of the year, we had a matching gift. You exceeded it. It was It was simply awesome, and we're so grateful. And what we want to do with it is not stockpile it. We want to just, it's like, how do we just get the word out more that God has a better way for your life? That God is zealous for good things in your life. He's not a party pooper. He's the one that knows he throws the best party. And the best party is doing everything his way. And his way is one man, one woman, in a one flesh relationship. Which, by the way, I heard a really great line about this, and I'm actually thinking about somehow turning this into a marriage sermon because I get to officiate a wedding in June. Oh, the kids, they're so doughy-eyed and romantic. It's so fun to watch. You just walk by and you go, I feel that. What are you two kids? They're in our church. They're going to be getting married. And I don't know that I'll do this ultimately, but I just heard a line. In fact, maybe it was Libby Glosson who said this. Her podcast is coming out very soon at Fortis Institute. It was when you get divorced, you're cutting the relationship. You're severing the relationship. Would you cut your own flesh? And the answer, maybe it was Greg Gifford on Transformed. I'm sorry, I'm getting our fellows confused. Would you cut your own flesh? Would you do like take something to harm your own body? Well, that's what you're doing with a divorce. You're cutting your body because you are in a one flesh union. It is that tight. And that union, ordained by God, has limits to how it can behave. And those limits make it the best party on earth, not the worst. They make it the best. Everything that God says is, we can buck against it, we can argue about it, and we can resist all we want to, but we're just plain wrong. God's ways are the best ways. And so it is when I read this article. I kind of hate to give this short trip because it was so good. It was written by Virgil Walker over at G3, who, by the way, you can go see Virgil Walker. We did the Martin Luther King theology thing. It's on the YouTube machine. He wrote an article that was like, way to go, dude. Way to go. It was uplifting. We'll spend more time with this another day, but the opening line says this: the battle for purity isn't about repression. Huh. That's at least neutral, if not positive. You mean God isn't stymieing my fun? He's not oppressing me? Instead, it's about allegiance. Single men are called to fight for their king, preparing their hearts for a life that glorifies God and honors the covenant of marriage. The fight is not just a call to resist sin, but an invitation to pledge allegiance to Christ, the true king. Now, isn't that elevating? I hope that's what Play the Man, it's a booklet that I wrote on the subject of pornography, seeks to accomplish, pulling us up to a better thing. God's ways are better. Okay, I've got a cup of throat coat tea right here because it's delicious, isn't it, Jimmy? Especially the licorice flavor. Okay, if there were a verse in the Bible that said, don't drink throat coat tea, I'm putting it down. Much as I enjoy it, I think it's really good for my throat. I think. But God says it's not. Then who do I agree with? Who do I side with? It should be a no-brainer. Him. His ways are right. His ways are just. His ways are true. His ways are lovely. His ways are worthy of praise. Everything about his dictates and demands, he does have those, aren't just to wreck your fun. They're to enhance your life. And in other words, God's view of anthropology is a little higher than most architects these days. From Virgil Walker, it's not just a matter of personal holiness. It's a preparation for something greater. Purity is training ground for the faithful husband you're called to become, or the undivided devotion of a man wholly dedicated to the Lord. It's not a checklist for spiritual discipline. It's a declaration of worship. It's a preparation for a life that glorifies God in every thought, word, and deed. That's what God wants for you. And you know, you've got to know it's the best way. Why? Because it's his way. Everything about his ways are good for you. How you doing in your battle against porn? Until tomorrow, go serve your king.